two, or three. Hey!
Hello again, everybody!
Now, if I didn't know we were doing a segment about Harry Carey, you would have frightened me. I'd be hiding under the desk right now. Hi, everybody. It's Bill Left. It's Wendy Snyder. Welcome to the show. We don't always have guests at the very top of the show unless it's a special circumstance, and this is a special circumstance. A book about the legendary Harry Carey, called The Legendary Harry Carey, Baseball's Greatest Salesman, has just come out. The author of that book, Don Zeminda, joins us live in studio. Hello, Don.
Hi, Bill. Hi, Wendy.
Hi, Don. Do you do a Harry Carey impression? Because I tried it, at least. You got to give me credit.
It would be embarrassing if I tried.
Oh, come on.
You just have to spell out anything
come
backward.
On.
Oh, that's
yeah,
pretty good.
Let me hear you now.
That's excellent. Fair to say, a one-of-a-kind type individual, right, Harry Carey? There's not a whole lot of guys like him.
Absolutely. There'll never be anybody like Harry again, I don't think.
What do you think the key was to that?
Well, you know, I think the fact that he was so passionate and connected and so into whatever he was doing, you know, not just broadcasting, but just interacting with people and living his life. He was such a passionate individual, and that just showed up in everything that he did.
Yeah.
And it made for great radio and yes, great television when he worked in doing a game.
And yeah, you get both teams who like him because he was with the White Sox and then moved over to the Cubs, although more popular with the Cubs, would you not say?
Yeah, for sure. But, you know, I grew up as a White Sox fan.
Good man.
And absolutely. And my connection with Harry started in the early 70s when he really helped keep the White Sox in Chicago. I think that team would have been gone without Harry because for a while there, he was the whole show. So that was the Harry that I really fell in love with. And then, of course, he got bigger than ever when he went with the Cubs. But the White Sox years were incredible.
Boy, that's so true, isn't it?
Yeah. Yeah,
he was the reason to go to a White Sox game
for
a long time.
In fact, the 77 season when they had the Southside Hitmen,
yeah,
that was such a colorful team. Bill Veeck was the owner. It was like a party every night, and Harry was the party host.
Yeah,
I got so into that team. I went to 40 games that year.
Wow.
I used to go every night. I would go to a whole series, and I was working for the post office then. I had to get up and start work at 6 in the morning.
Oh, my God.
I would go to a night game just because I didn't want to miss it.
Yeah.
That was how much fun it was.
Don, I can still remember the very first time I heard him on the radio. There was a rain delay during a game. So to fill time, he interviewed himself. And he would say, Harry, what's the most exciting game you've ever called? And he'd go, well, Carrie, you got to go back 25 years. So back and forth for about 10 minutes. And as a kid, I'm going, this guy's out of his mind. I love this guy.
Absolutely. But, you know, there's a great story about Harry by himself. Back in the 40s, when baseball broadcasting was pretty new,
yeah,
the teams did not go on road games. What they would do is they would have if they did a road game at all, they would have the broadcaster in the studio. This was in St. Louis.
Yeah.
And then they would have a ticker feed,
yeah,
you know, sending, you know, B1, S1,
right,
foul ball, whatever. And Harry would do the whole game. He would bring in crowd noises. He'd have, hey, hot dogs. He would just make this game come alive,
yeah,
so much that after a while, people didn't know whether he was actually at the game or not. And this became so popular that eventually they just said, let's send him on the road
games. Yeah, why not? That's so funny.
Did he start the take me out to the ball game thing?
He did. And in fact, that started with the White Sox in 76. It was really Bill Veeck's idea. Supposedly, Harry always sang the song just to the people around the broadcast booth. And Bill heard about it. And one night when Nancy Faust was playing the song and Harry was singing, he just turned on the PA system and suddenly the whole stadium could hear it and people went crazy. And that became the tradition for the rest of his life.
Please discuss the most interesting pairing of baseball announcers of all time. And you already know who I'm going to say. It's Harry Carey and Jimmy Pearsall. Talk a little bit about that pairing.
Absolutely. Well, I mean, they were so intense and so crazy. One of the guys that I talked to for the book was Ron Rappaport.
Yeah,
who's
great
just
sports
written
writer.
Written a great biography of Ernie Banks, but Ron was working for the Sun-Times back then. And Ron told me that Harry and Jimmy were making so much news that they actually had a guy in the Sun-Times offices listening to the game just in case they did something so wacky that it was going to be in the news the
right
next morning. They didn't want to miss it, but that's what Harry and Jimmy were like.
So he called baseball games. Were there any other sports that he was interested in?
Yeah, he did. He did University of Missouri football for like over 10 years. He did some Notre Dame games. He did some bowl games in football. And he did basketball as well. In fact, there's a great story about him doing a basketball game. He was doing the St. Louis Hawks, and they had a game in Memphis. I don't know, was it a preseason game or what? And Elvis was a big Harry fan.
What?
Elvis found out that Harry was in Memphis, called him up and said, "Harry, I'll send a limo out. We'll bring you out to Graceland." After the game, they did that. Harry hung out with Elvis. They ate ribs. They drank beer.
Wow.
They talked about everything, and that was Harry and Elvis.
I never knew that.
My favorite picture of all time is Elvis Presley and Richard Nixon together. Yeah. If you throw Harry Carey into that equation, it's even better. I wish so badly he was part of that.
Well, really, I mean, it's appropriate, though, because Harry, especially in the Cub years, he was a rock star.
Right.
You know, Bob Vorwald, who's the WGN producer, told me that when Harry would show up in spring training and get out of his limo, I mean, he was so mobbed. I mean, it was literally like U2 or the Beatles or some group like that.
Yeah.
He got so much attention.
All right. Tell me about this, because so far it's only in rumor stage, but you've done some research for the book, so you would know. His reason for leaving St. Louis was what?
Well, the story that always goes out was that he was involved with the wife of Gussie Bush's son. Gussie Bush was the owner of the Cardinals.
Yes.
You know, I've talked to a number of people about whether there was something going on or not. The consensus seems to be that there was.
Yeah.
They both denied it. He denied it, and then she gave an interview years later where she denied it. But whether there was something going on or not, people thought there was.
Yeah.
And this did not go down too well in St. Louis. And there were a couple other things going on in St. Louis. And believe it or not, there were actually people in the Budweiser organization that thought Harry was bad for their brand. I mean, considering what happened with the Cubs, you know, Cub fan Budman, that's hard to believe.
Right.
But Harry was different with the Cubs than he was with the White Sox and Cardinals. He was much more critical during his Cardinal days, especially. He would get on players. I mean, the White Sox, he was famous for getting on Bill Melton.
Yeah.
And a lot of people in the Budweiser organization didn't like that. They thought, you know, this is alienating people. This is bad for our brand. So it was kind of a combination of things. But I think the rumor, whether it happened or not, was really the big reason
Absolutely.
Why he left.
The book is called The Legendary Harry Carey, Baseball's Greatest Salesman. The author of that book is Don Zeminda. He's here. If you have any questions or comments, 312-981-7200. We'll pick this up in just a little bit. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN.
Sure as God made green apples, someday the Chicago Cubs are going to be in the World Series. And maybe sooner than we think.
Bill Laff, it's Wendy Snyder. Our guest is Don Zeminda. He's the author of The Legendary Harry Carey, Baseball's Greatest Salesman. Let's talk about the title for a little bit. Why do you refer to him as baseball's greatest salesman?
I really don't think anybody in baseball history did a better job of selling the experience of how much fun baseball was. Listening to the game, watching the game on TV, and especially being in the park.
Yep.
And, you know, one thing that was interesting about Harry was that during the strike in 1994, a lot of people turned away from baseball, said, you know, we're never going to go to another game. Harry really, during that time, worked tirelessly to try to stay connected with the fans. And he really, I think, had a lot to do with people coming back to the ballpark
mm-hmm.
because they didn't trust the players. They didn't trust the owners. They trusted Harry. They knew he was a good guy. He wanted them to come out, and they came out.
Do you remember on Saturdays for a while, he would broadcast the games from the bleachers, and he was so accessible all through the game, even when the game wasn't on, like during a commercial break, fans would come up and have pictures taken with him, have him sign autographs. He loved every minute of it. It looked so good to watch him work.
Yeah, you know, that actually started in St. Louis, but it really picked up in Chicago when he was with the White Sox.
Yeah.
They used to do every Wednesday afternoon if they had a home game, Harry would do the game from the bleachers. And I have some sound clips from those games, and it's insane because like between pitches Harry's talking to the fans he's buying people beer
I mean, it's so fun to listen to.
I mean, it really is a big party.
Yeah.
And you know, you just had to be there, and the White Sox people said, you know, within a year or so those became the most popular seats. Everybody wanted to be close to Harry because they didn't want to miss out on what he was doing.
Are there any things that you found out that really surprised you about Harry that you hadn't heard before?
You know, one thing that's kind of funny, I heard this from Al Lerner, Big Al.
Mm-hmm.
when Harry started becoming an entrepreneur, somebody came up with the idea of getting a beverage called Holy Cow. It was a line of soft drinks.
Pop. Yeah.
Yeah, and they thought to roll out this product, they would have Harry leading a cow down this little aisle to sort of promote the product.
Yeah.
And Al told me Harry was terrified of the cow.
Really?
Didn't want to go near him. And Al had to do it himself and the beverage tank.
That's too bad. Speaking of drinks, what is the 300,000 drink challenge?
Well, I actually heard that one from Grant DePorter, who's the CEO of the Harry Caray's Restaurant Group. Apparently, after Harry died, they were going through his artifacts, and they found what they called Harry's drinking diary. And this was back in the days when you could, you know, have a three-martini lunch, and you could write it off as a tax write-off. Yeah. So Harry would, wherever he went, he would write down, you know, I went to Pete Miller's and had three drinks, and then I went on to this place and had two more drinks. And so he had a record, you know, apparently for tax purposes. So Grant and his guys went through it, and they calculated based on Harry's nightly average and how many years Harry had been drinking, what his total was. And they came up with 300,000 drinks over the course of his life.
That seems low.
Boy, you know,
that seemed low.
And, you know, the man only lived to be 84 years old. Imagine what would have happened if he'd been taking care of himself.
How was he as a guide? Both his son and his grandson went on to do what he does, call baseball games, Chip and Skip Caray. What was the relationship like with them?
You know, it was difficult because Harry was divorced a couple of times before he met Dutchie. And in fact, Harry had a difficult childhood himself. He never knew his father. His father apparently went away to World War I and never came back.
Yeah.
His mother died when Harry was fairly young. He was raised by an aunt and uncle, and then the uncle left. So it was a really difficult childhood situation. I talked to Chip at some length about Harry, and Chip was very candid about it. He said Harry was very good at being Harry, the life of the party.
Mm-hmm.
He was not so good at being dad and granddad. But he really changed over the course of his life, and especially Dutchie had a lot to do with that. I mean, Dutchie's an amazing woman. I talked to her as well. She's 90 years old. She's lively as ever.
Yeah.
You could see how if anybody could keep up with Harry, Dutchie
she was the
could.
Girl.
Yeah, but Dutchie had kids of her own, and you know, Dutchie was very family oriented, and really Dutchie helped Harry reconnect with his son and his grandson, and really, but you know, by the time Harry died, he was going to work with Chip on Cub broadcast, and then that didn't happen because he had the heart attack and then died before the season started. But, you know, both of them were really looking forward to working together. That relationship
would have been
had
great.
Really changed.
Yeah.
Harry Caray, larger than life, so much fun. Can you think of anyone else who could hold his microphone? Can we compare him to anyone else today or even in the past? I don't think so.
You know, there are people that are probably as famous as Harry, you know, Red Barber, or I worked in L.A. for a long time, and Vin Scully comes to mind. But there's nobody like Harry, and I don't think there ever will be anybody like Harry again. I mean, I don't think that an announcer today could get away with the kind of stuff that Harry did, particularly when he called himself the voice of the fan, but he was sometimes the voice of the angry fan.
Yes, he was. Yeah.
And, you know, he called the owner of his team an idiot. he was talking about Chuck Tanner, the manager of his own team. He said, he did a terrible job. They should fire him. I mean, who could get away with that? Only Harry. Only Harry had the chops to do that. But baseball has changed. I mean, now the announcers they're employees of the team,
sure.
Essentially. You don't want the announcer running down your product. And these guys make millions of dollars now. So they're very careful about not being too negative. So I think that what kind of stuff that Harry did, that will never happen again.
Yeah.
But thank God that it did happen.
Every once in a while, Ron Santo, you know,
he
just
got
because,
close.
Right? Sometimes he'd be right in the neighborhood.
Because he was so passionate.
Because he was so passionate and wanted so badly.
Yeah.
Wendy and I have discussed this. When the Cubs finally won the World Series a few years ago, all of us thought about Ron Santo, and we thought about Harry Caray and the guys who gave their lives to calling those games and didn't get to see the end result.
Yeah.
How sad that is.
Yeah, and Hawk Harrelson comes to mind, too.
Sure, for the White Sox.
But he's another guy there. He's gone. there won't be somebody like him again either. Sure. But Harry was totally unique.
And Ron had his moments that were priceless, but it wasn't all drawn out like Harry. Harry was like always on.
Yeah.
Always
no
on.
No question.
The book is called The Legendary Harry Carey, Baseball's Greatest Salesman. Don Zeminda is here with us. We want to thank you for coming in. You had a couple of book signings over the weekend. They went well, I take it?
Yes, they did.
And you came in before you hop on a plane to go back to where you live. Where's the best place to get your book?
I was in Anderson's bookshop signing books over the weekend in the south suburbs, but really wherever books are sold, the books should be available.
Perfect.
Perfect.
So nice to meet you, Don. Congrats on the book.
Thank you.
Really well done.
Holy cow!
Hey!
Come on, hello again, everybody. Why doesn't anyone else even try it?
I don't know.
Well, because we heard you first.
Right.
All right. Bertrand, I want to hear you do it. All right, that's
not
bad.
Bad.
Or
very
are
nice.
You choking? I couldn't tell which it was. Right.
I wouldn't be a home run in the phone booth.
That's pretty good.
It's very good.
There's a little Harry in all of us. That's what I got to tell you. Don, good luck with the book. Thank you so much for chatting with us.
Thank you.